The following is an Auburn Network production.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. To be a part of the show, call 334-321-1390 or text in at 334-784-1067. The boys are bringing you all the action on the Auburn Opelika Sports Leader. When it comes to the Tigers, the SEC, and the hottest topics in sports, this is where you want to be.
Fireworks in the air this weekend. Fireworks on the football field. How explosive is this Alex Golish offense? It's Thursday, and you're on the line.
Now, live from Auburn, Alabama, straight from the ESPN 106.7 studio, here's Kristen Griffin and Trip Upton.
Yes, welcome in. It is the Thursday edition of On the Line. I'm Christian Griffin here with you in the studio. Happy Thursday, everybody. July 2nd, moving right along through this fast-paced summer, it feels like, and already into the month of July. I appreciate everybody for being here with us on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. And a Thursday that feels a little bit like a Friday here this afternoon, our final show of the week, and so excited for you to be here with us. We're having a lot of fun here in the studio this afternoon, and so hoping that you're going to be a part of the show as well, as we just put on, the round of 32, Spain, and is that Austria? Okay, we got the, trying to get the memo to mute it to, unless we want to hear just the goals go absolutely crazy. No, happy Thursday. Happy basically Friday here on ESPN 106.7, at least according to our side of things here this afternoon. As I mentioned, I'm Christian Griffin. I welcome in my man Trip Upton sitting across from me in the studio. Happy Thursday. Happy basically Friday, sir. I know that you got a busy weekend planned, hopping on a plane here Yes. This weekend, or I guess tonight rather, as soon as we're done with the show, but decided to stick it out and push everything back a little bit to make sure you could be on the Auburn Opelika like a sports leader.
There's nowhere else I'd want to be than right here with you in your cars, coming out of the Radio Alabama app or ESPN 106.7 or ESPNAU.com, wherever you're listening to this, or even if you're catching it later on the podcast version. But no, it is excited heading down to the beach of the Carolinas tonight, and we'll be back. Well, no worries, we'll be back Monday, and we'll be ready to go. Hopefully, there's going to be a ton of stuff going on this weekend, obviously the 4th of July, but give us some sports stuff to talk about with a lot to talk about. But if you want to be a part of the show today, phone lines are open until 3:30, 334-321-1390. Text box always open at 334-784-1685. And Christian, tell them what they're going to be hearing today on the Auburn Opelika Sports Leader.
Yeah, again, a lot of how explosive this Alex Golish offense could be. A little bit of a 4th of July themed show for you this afternoon. Not quite exactly that, but tried to make the connections as much as we could here this afternoon. Talking about explosive plays that Alex Golish saw at South Florida, what that could look like on the plains inside Jordan-Hare Stadium here coming up in the fall. We'll be able to talk a lot about some of those numbers, some of the analytics, just showing you how good that offense was just in itself, much less with the explosive plays, making drives, making scoring that much easier. We also saw an article from Saturday Down South that mentions the all-quarter century team and talking about kind of what every single top player at their position throughout the SEC looks like. And although it's 2026, you're past that century mark by, or the quarter century mark by a year, we wanted to take a look at that and dive into not only that from the SEC angle, but then also take a little look at that from the Auburn perspective as well, and look at a little bit of an Auburn football quarter century team, or quarter century and a year team. Even though I don't think that there will be too many that'll go on last year's team, there could be, that make this list. And so all of that in hour number one. Again, no Brad Law of the Auburn Sports Network usually with us on Thursday at 2:30, but wanted to give a little bit of time off for him. Again, no big real news to discuss here during the summer for Auburn football, Auburn athletics. And so we will pick back up with him maybe next week, if not the week after that, once everything starts picking up yet again. And then hour number two, talking about ESPN listed an article about the GOAT for every number, 0 through 99, and how Auburn is not mentioned on any of those numbers. And so we'll be able to discuss that. They're listed in a couple honorable mentions, and we think some of that is just absolute blasphemy. We'll talk Correct. A lot about that in the Auburn perspective, and then again, how certain players took the override for some of these numbers that just don't feel the way that they should go here in this article. So a lot to discuss here on the show today. But as Tripp mentioned, if you would like to be a part of today's show, the phone lines are open for the first hour and a half here this afternoon at 334-321-1390. Text box is always open at 334-784-1067. But what the people really want to know is, does Joey Chestnut, does he continue his title here this weekend? I know that'll be something we'll talk about to end the show, but a little preview. Is there anybody? Is Tripp Upton making his way to the hot dog eating contest and taking down
Mr.
Chestnut?
No, I cannot. It's impressive how much people can eat in a certain amount of time. Like, looking into that stuff is so interesting, seeing like what world records are out there, because it'll be like, yeah, this person has eaten, 75 pickled eggs in 2 minutes, and that's actually a world record. Or this person has eaten 105 Little Debbie's cakes. No free ads, but just saying it like it is, that's a impressive record to have. So I will not be in Coney Island, but I will be glued in front of my TV at noon or one or wherever it is. Hopefully we don't get a rain delay like we did, I think it was a year or two ago, where they had the rain delay and Joey basically was like, we are still eating.
Yeah.
And they ended up having it. That was incredible. The true sports heroism and shows the impact on the game that he has, that he can tell them, no, we're actually going to play. Like, imagine if a player in the MLB said, nope, I know it's thunderstorming, take the tarp off.
I know
off.
I can't see the infield, but
take the tarp off.
Take the tarp off.
Put your gear on.
Take the tarps off in the outfield if you so choose, as many fans are starting to do at the major league level. Looking at major league eating, just while we have the moment and we're on that subject of conversation. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
12 minutes, 1 gallon and 9 ounces of vanilla ice cream, 47 oysters in 8 minutes, 53 soft shell tacos in 10 minutes from Joey Chestnut back in 2011, 91 Chinese dumplings in 8 minutes.
7.5 extra large pizza slices.
10 pounds of spaghetti in 8 minutes. Holy cow.
12 pounds, 8 ounces of deep fried asparagus spears, record by Joey.
9 pounds, 6 ounces of smoked pulled pork. Goodness gracious. That's also Joey Chestnut. It's one of those things of like, man, you talk about Mount Rushmore of anything. This man's got to be put on it. That was back in 2006. I didn't even know that this was a thing.
Oh, dude, no. So, funny enough, one time my family met one of these people. We were at my great-grandmother's funeral, and this guy that she used to nanny came up, and I'll name drop him. He said his name was Daniel Boone. He's like, yeah, I'm named after my ancestor, who is the folklore hero, and we ended up looking him up. And this dude, owned multiple world records. He was never I guess he would not be like a Joey Chestnut or a Nathan's hot dog eating contest participant. But he was in that next tier below them. And it was just impressive stuff.
Dude, I'm still sitting here looking at everything.
5 pounds of baby back ribs in 8 minutes.
A 22-ounce 7-Eleven Slurpee in 9 seconds. 182 strips of bacon in less than 5 minutes.
Hold on, I gotta pull up the greatest records.
13.5 pounds of fudge in 8 minutes, 281 buffalo chicken wings in 12 minutes.
This dude named Don Lerman, 28 ounces of butter in 5 minutes.
Oh, gosh.
This dude ate 36 live cockroaches in 60 seconds.
Yeah, that's enough of that.
Yeah. That is... Yeah, Joey's current record that he set in 2018 of 74 hot dogs, I believe that is still the record. I'm going to double check that, but this website that I'm looking at says that he did that under 10 minutes. That's 2 giraffes worth of hot dogs.
Good gosh.
Yeah, 76 is actually the record.
This is what we needed to end the show. I don't want to think about this. This is making me.
Yeah.
11 pounds of key lime pie in 8 minutes.
Ugh. I think that would
8 pounds of French fries in 10 minutes. Holy cow.
That would be a great fantasy punishment to have, that you have to enter yourself in one of these competitions. And it'd be the winner's choice. Like, yeah, you actually have to go eat, compete in the like the donut eating contest and
fried asparagus spears.
Yeah, that's what I was saying earlier. Like 12 pounds, 8 ounces. That's a baby worth of fried asparagus. And you just ate that in 10 minutes.
Yeah.
I don't want to know. It's a life that I could not have, but a life that I kind of envy.
Joey Chestnut in 2019, 81 waffles, 81 Eggo waffles in 8 minutes.
Oh my goodness.
Enter me into that and I'll get like 8.
I could honestly.
And then won't move the rest of the day.
I think I could get 10. I think I could do – I think that one, because I eat Eggo waffles every morning. That's a little bit of a free ad, but not meaning to be. But that's so impressive. Goodness.
Holy cow. All right. Well,
I'm glad
we went down that rabbit hole.
Yeah,
talking about explosive.
Yeah, I'm sure there's some other explosive things that happen after these eating competitions. But let's focus on what the field, Alex Golish, in this offense, because the analytics really like what he's been able to do recently.
Yeah, looking at, again, just how explosive this Alex Golish offense has been and can be, and Auburn fans hope will be inside Jordan-Hare Stadium come the fall of 2026, which is wild to think, again, that we are only seems a lot longer than this and a lot further away, but you see all of the posts on August 1st of this is the we have college football this month. And so the idea that this is the last month that you don't have college football for quite some time, that's a pretty cool thought.
Last month, full month where my Saturdays are completely wide
open.
Yeah,
honey, you have any ideas? You have any plans for Saturday? Sure, get them in now.
Because, get them in now.
Again, like we talked about, even week two is one that you won't want to miss. And so, no, should be a whole lot of fun, and I'm very excited for it. But some articles that you found, and just looking at, again, some of these NCAA sites, the team rankings that you can go and you can look at just about any single offensive and defensive category that you so choose. But, man, when you look at some of these websites, it goes just to show you how good this offense can be and has been and was last year. Looking at team rankings, just simply looking at yards per play for South Florida. Last year, they ranked 7th behind Notre Dame, Vanderbilt, North Texas, USC, Arkansas, funny enough, with Taylen Green, Oregon, and then South Florida right there, averaging 6.5 yards per play. And the year before that, 6.5 yards per play. And so this was not just it's a one-year deal. It's a one-year thing of a really good offense because you have a really good quarterback. Or you had that one breakout receiver that could go and have a 75-yard touchdown catch in 3 different games that plays to where that's the big outlier, right? No, this is a formula that Alex Golish has figured out, and the word explosive comes to mind because he's used that word plenty of times on the offensive side of the football. And the idea that South Florida ranked so high last year with an offense that still prioritized running the football, I think that is what stands out to me.
Yeah, and you look at Auburn, for example. They, for comparison, I think you read that off of the team rankings website that they had 6.6 yards per play. The third one in the rundown.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Auburn.
Sorry, I thought that was. I didn't know that was the question. I thought that was setting it up.
Yeah. So Auburn was 1/10 on that same list South Florida was top 10 at 7.
Yeah, South Florida averaged more than a yard and a half per play more than Auburn did.
Yeah, so that should tell you what this offensive success rate looks like on that one. A site that I love that I'm going to be looking at, you mentioned the rushing offense for USF, it's this site called CFB Graphs by Parker Fleming, I found this site a couple years ago, and it scratched my college football nerd analytic brain having this stuff on there that just can list any statistic you want. If you are into that kind of stuff, I know, I'll have to send this over to our good friend Jack, because I think he would just spend hours looking at this. But so looking at the offensive success rate for each team, South Florida finished 23rd in the country with the rushing success rate, and that's such a big thing for them, even with a group of five offensive line, quote unquote. I know you say that with a lot of those guys coming over to Auburn. I don't mean that in any disrespectful way, because I think that the talent outweighs the label of a group of five offensive line. But you're up there with teams like Arizona, James Madison, who made a playoff run, Georgia Tech, who was ferocious running the football, Missouri with Ahmad Hardy. On top of that, they had the 19th most successful passing offense. That totals for the 17th best offense in the country, according to the analytics. It's pretty impressive.
Basically showing that this was not a one-dimensional offense, and although you prioritize running the football, the idea that, okay, and I'm sure that running the football, those numbers are Byron Brown scrambling as well, that go into rushing rather than passing, but just showing that it's not just a one-dimensional side of things. I wanted to look at, and this was not something we had on the rundown, but just something to kind of double down the point of yards per play. Auburn and South Florida last year basically ran the same amount of plays every single game. South Florida ranked 17th at 73.2. Florida Atlantic was the fastest in 2025 of 79.8,
really?
Just for perspective.
Huh.
Baylor right in there at 77, Mississippi State at 77, Texas Tech right there, Tulsa, Arkansas State, some of these smaller teams. Ole Miss, again, a team that ran really fast with Lane Kiffin.
A lot of those run-and-shoot type of
teams. Yeah, just a beer-and-shoot offense. Yeah, get up and go. But Ole Miss was 13th at 73.4. Again, South Florida was at 73.2, right behind that, in a stat that I would not have believed you if you told me. Auburn was 22nd at 72.9. Hmm. Basically, both teams running 73 plays per game. But then you go and you look at yards per play, and just for the sake of conversation, I think it was 1.6, but say that South Florida averaged a yard and a half more than Auburn did, which was what that says. Imagine Auburn's offense running the same amount of plays, but having 109.5 more yards of offense every single game.
Yeah, I was about to say, I saw the calculator app come out.
Imagine moving more than a football field every single play or every single game. It doesn't mean anything crazy, 1.5 yards per play, yet when you run 73 of them, all of a sudden you're looking at, okay, instead of 300 yards of offense, you're at 400. Instead of 350, you're at 450. Think about how many first downs that equals. Think about how many points that equals. Think about just the indirect of, okay, we get to the 25. You know what? Let's go score. That's 25 yards. I mean, these are very big numbers when you're looking at the grand scheme of things. Imagine Auburn's offense averaging more than 1,200 yards, more than what they did last season.
Yeah, and looking at how many games that came down to a possession or two, effectively you're adding a touchdown onto that.
Yeah.
And suddenly Auburn is, instead of close, they're there.
Yeah.
That's going to be such an interesting thing. Looking at Auburn stats last season, they finished 61st offensive efficiency-wise, so middle of the pack, lower in the Power 5, obviously. They actually were slightly better at running the football, 53rd. But then you look at the passing statistic, and that's the number that really juts out to you. They were actually negative efficiency at 81. So what that effect?
Auburn had a negative efficiency passing the football last year.
Mm-hmm. Yes, effectively. If I'm reading this correctly, what that means is that the average play, if they threw the ball, it was less likely to work than if they were just to knee the ball down. It just be like an average play. It's
sure.
Below average play, and I think that looking at what was on the field, that makes sense. I mean,
I wonder what sack yardage does to that as well.
Yeah, I'd have to look again. I don't have the formula in front of me.
Because what was it? Auburn allowed, was it 43 or 44 sacks last year? That was,
I believe it.
I think I guessed like 20 something, and you were like, huh, funny, double that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a gross thought. So basically, any time Auburn dropped back, it was less beneficial than it would be to just run the ball and get 2 yards.
Yeah, so looking at the where they are in national, there are some SEC teams around them. Kentucky is at 79, Missouri at 83. The two teams are sandwiched between at the 82nd, Ohio, and at number 80, our good friend Nick Minicucci. And
let's
Delaware.
Go in Delaware, the Blue Hens,
the
baby.
Blue Hens. But they also had they were also the 93rd rated offense, period. Auburn 30 spaces above that. Looking at just overall offense for the Auburn Tigers, sandwiched in between some average programs, but programs that you've got to be a little bit better than, looking at like Clemson, Louisville, Mississippi State, Pittsburgh, Utah State, Army, Northwestern, kind of in that area. So that was pretty decent, but then you look at the defensive numbers for Auburn, just to give DJ Durkin some more credit. The 22nd rated defense in the country, number 9 against the run, number 54 against the pass, but that's because you're on the field so much more, because your offense goes 3 and out, 3 and out, 3 and out, and they're going to throw the ball on you when they're coming back to beat you when you've blown a lead.
Yeah, yeah. I want to talk a little bit more about that and the defensive side of things, and how I had a conversation earlier again about Auburn's defense, and goes to explain perfectly the mentality for this DJ Durkin defense, and how, man, you give this team any sort of offense and a great defense looks that much better. I want to dive into that when we come back. Phone lines are open. If you want to be a part of the conversation, we invite you to do so. 334-321-1390. The text box always open as well at 334-784-1OTL. We'll continue talking this conversation, the explosive side of the offense and the lack thereof on the positive side of things for Auburn's defense. When we return, we're just off and running here on the Thursday edition of On the Line.
From revolution to rockets, from dusty frontiers to city skylines, these are the moments that shaped America. This is the American Minute, presented by Bucks Island. July 4th, 1776. Inside Philadelphia's Pennsylvania State House, 56 men prepared to sign a document unlike any the world had ever seen. A declaration that 13 small colonies would break away from the most powerful empire on earth. If they failed, it would be treason, punishable by death. John Hancock signed first, boldly. Then the others followed. Farmers, merchants, lawyers. Ordinary men risking everything. Their words, radical for the time. That all men are created equal. Now, 2.5 centuries later, that idea still echoes. One defining moment that shaped the country we call home. This American Minute is presented by Bucks Island. Family owned and operated, serving boaters since 1948. Online at bucksisland.com.
You're on the line with Kristen Griffin and Trip Upton. If you want to be a part of the show, call 334-321-1390 or text us at 334-784-1067.
All right, we're back here on the Thursday edition of On the Line. Appreciate everybody for being here with us on ESPN 106.7. He is Trip Upton. I'm Christian Griffin. Having a good time here in the studio, and was told to give a little shout-out to those down at the beach already. I mean,
yes.
I can't give too big of a shout-out because, I don't know, I'm here in Auburn this weekend, and so
pull up.
That was very much the pity invite, and so
no,
can't necessarily accept that, but no, we are having a good time here this afternoon, and continuing the conversation, but flipping sides of the football for Auburn, and something that I talked a little bit about on Doug's show, the Max Roundtable, earlier this afternoon, about Auburn's defense, and how you go and you look at some of the numbers that their team put up, and the bend don't break mentality that you feel like DJ Durkin has had. Where if you don't go and you don't watch this Auburn team play, you don't watch the defense who played what we've talked about, it felt like 75% of the snaps, and yeah, eventually you're going to allow a touchdown in the third and fourth quarter because you're absolutely exhausted after the third straight 3 and out with swag surf in the middle of those. Mm. But you look at the defensive numbers, and just by themselves, they seem pretty solid. They seem relatively decent, but just as the box score viewer, they tell you absolutely nothing. Yet that being said, even with a very poor offense, what you were reading out, the fact that Auburn was a top 10 run defense in the country and they were 54th, yet in every single game you would not point at the defense, I'll say, while DJ Durkin was the defensive coordinator, because again, I think Vanderbilt was the one exception, but that was when DJ Durkin was wearing the hat of the head coach and kind of the defensive coordinator. And so putting that one a little bit to the side, when DJ Durkin is the defensive coordinator and just has to worry about his side of the football, there was not one game last year that I looked at the defense and said, man, if you did your job, Auburn wins the football game.
100%. Like, they look, I'd have to look at the box scores because I don't have them in front of me right now, but looking at like Texas A&M game, the Oklahoma game, they limited those teams. Georgia, they limited through three quarters. Those are all three of those teams are playoff teams. Alabama didn't walk into Jordan-Hare Stadium and put on a, you know, fireworks show. It was very much a Auburn had opportunities late and let them, and their defense would get stops. You know, it's not a, it was not a position where Auburn was just hold on through defense. Just please, make, if you allow a field goal, okay, whatever.
Yeah.
It was a, I have full confidence that the punt team is going to come out for the other team. And, you know, oh, we give up a field goal. Sure. They're not going to get in the end zone. It was very rare to see the opposing team score in a way that I did not feel about the offense, where it was just please, you know, just have someone in the secondary fall down and maybe we can be gifted a touchdown instead of a long, methodical, boom, bam, pow, touchdown kind of drive. It was, you're hoping for the big plays, not the heart-wrenching drives that could go down the field, you know, the death marches, the six-minute touchdown drives, because Auburn couldn't do that.
Auburn couldn't
year.
Do it. No, they were, weirdly enough, Auburn was a fantastic big play team. They were one of the top of the country of just getting that explosive play, but it was the lack there of well, let's sustain a drive and then have that big play. Let's have that knockout punch. Let's go from the 15-yard line to midfield and then have the 50-yard bomb, or have the 25-yard run to start the drive and then go down and continue what you're calling that death march of just a absolutely gut-wrenching drive, especially for like a team on the road, of just silencing whatever student section was there. You feel like as of late, this Auburn team has played so anti-college football. College football feels like it's at the point of, yeah, okay, who cares if you get the stop? We're going to go down, or who cares if you scored? We're going to go down and score as well. We're looking for our defense to get that one stop in the third quarter. Please, get me one stop so our defense can go down and score. Auburn over the last handful of years has been, okay, our defense is going to get the stop. Please go down and get some sort of points. Please, just something. 24 points to Oklahoma, 16 to Texas A&M, 20 to Georgia, 23 to Missouri, 10 to Kentucky. All of those resulted in losses. You're telling me you're looking at the defense for that? Hell no.
Yeah, that's such an interesting point. A stat to go to break, if I'm reading this correctly, off the stat that Auburn ranked worst in possibly is their drive field position start time. So,
sounds about right. We'll continue talking this when we come back.
You're on the line, and we're just 30 minutes in. Now back to the studio with Kristen Griffin and Trip Upton on ESPN 106.7.
Oh, man. First things first, we're back here on the Thursday edition of On the Line. Reminder, no show tomorrow, so basically the free-for-all Friday edition, but here on this Thursday afternoon, the July 4th edition of On the Line, and started with it talking about the explosiveness of what this offense can be under Alex Golish, and it more so morphed into just the overall offensive success. We talked about the big plays, we talked about those fireworks, but then we're also just sitting here discussing and kind of dissecting what South Florida did last year versus what Auburn did. And we talked about the points or the yards per play, where South Florida basically averaged a yard and a half more per play than Auburn did, while they averaged just about the same number of plays, ultimately resulting in just over 109 yards additional per game. Think about what that would do for this Auburn team. And while we were away, Found the number that I was looking for, and it's points per drive. And this is looking at BCF Toys, which is kind of the reminded me of the BCS. Mm-hmm. Rest in peace. But looking at the 2025 points per drive, and I'll give you one answer to figure out which team you think is first. Okay, ding. It was the Indiana Hoosiers that averaged 3.46 points per drive. That's absolutely ridiculous. Notre Dame right there, Ohio State right there, Oregon, Texas Tech, Utah, Georgia, North Texas, all of these teams well at the top of the category, all around 3 points offensive per drive. And so imagine kicking a field goal every drive, essentially. Or if you do punt, you're going to make that up with scoring a touchdown in the next drive. South Florida ranked 17th, averaging 2.91 points per drive. You got to scroll quite a ways to find the Auburn Tigers, who sit at 59th at 2.1 points per drive. That's 0.7 points per drive. We'll round up for the sake of conversation and say that, or I guess it would be 0.8 rather, 0.81. Say that, okay, South Florida averages just about a point more per drive. You get what? In today's day and age of college football with the running clocks now, which don't get me started on that, but 7, 8, 9, 10 drives a game, if you're lucky. It's a touchdown a game, is it not? Just about. You want to go back and look at those schedules? Go back and look at what Auburn's record was if you would have scored a touchdown more per game? I feel like you wouldn't really want to. And then you go look at the defensive points per drive. South Florida at 1.85, Auburn, 1.85. So you're essentially saying, okay, just for this conversation, you have a defense that's the exact same. You have that Auburn defense that's really, really solid, that's not going to allow a whole lot of points. Then you take South Florida's offense and you put them on Auburn's defense from last year, it's just about a point more per drive. Doesn't sound like a lot, just like 1.5 yards per play doesn't sound like a lot. But when you add it up over a game, you add it up over a season, much less you have the outlier game where you triple that or at least double that, and it makes it to where, man, all of a sudden a one-score game on the wrong side turns into a 10-point win for the Tigers.
I'll take it.
Yeah, I think I would take that as well. Again, men and women lie. Numbers don't lie. There's a lot of offensive excitement for what Alex Golish is going to bring to the Plains.
Yeah, and let's take a look now kind of deeper into what Byron Brown looks like at quarterback comparatively to some other quarterbacks. This is based on his 2025 season. Byron had an EPA, so expected, for people that don't, expected points added over the entire season of 101.38. That is only behind names such as Anthony Calandri at UNLV. Good offense with the Dan Mullen offense. Mm-hmm. He's at Nebraska this year. Gunnar Stockton, Fernando Mendoza, Trinidad Chambliss, Drew Mestemaker, another AAC player, but is highly regarded as a potential number one draft pick now at Oklahoma State. The UConn quarterback, Diego Pavia, Julian Sayin, and Jaden Maivia. If you look at his scramble yardage and scramble expected points added, he is one of the higher quarterbacks on the list with guys with like Fernando Mendoza, again, Arch Manning, Kamario Taylor, Marcel Reed, and right above a name that Auburn fans know pretty well, Robbie Ashford. What does that mean? I mean, those are numbers that are very, very, very good for a guy like what this team is getting. I'm pulling up the Auburn quarterback numbers versus the Byron Brown numbers for last year. Yes, so passing, top 10 total EPA overall for Byron Brown. Jackson Arnold, 101 with a negative 45. Again, not to call out Jackson Arnold, he just was the majority starter on the season.
Negative 45, or is it negative like 4 point, or is it?
Negative 45.40 over the entire season.
And what was Byron's?
101.
101. Okay.
101.
So basically, just from my standpoint, because I haven't seen this quite yet either.
150-point difference.
But is this kind of comparable to like a WAR in baseball?
Yes.
Like wins above replacement?
Expected points added, it measures how much a play or a series changes a team's expected points. A positive EPA means the offense improved their scoring chances.
So the most
middle of the pack quarterback, you could say is around zero, right? Just for this conversation of somebody that doesn't do anything wrong, but doesn't do anything really great either, allows the offense to work to where basically his spot would be interchangeable, because it would mean that that quarterback wouldn't have the expected number, the expected points added with his name.
Yeah, so basically it would be like the if a positive EPA means the offense improved their scoring chances, a negative means they hurt it on the offensive side. Obviously, you want a negative one for defense because it hurts the offense. It's all based off the offense. So that is, again.
And so just looking at the quarterbacks from Byron Brown and Jackson Arnold, there were 150 points in the direction of Byron Brown to what he added on the football field when he was on it.
Efficiency-wise, yes.
Holy cow.
Looking at the passing stats specifically, 78.5, that is good for 14th in the country. Jackson Arnold with a negative 24.29.
So just passing alone is right around 100 points.
That's for 1/12th in the country. Rushing.
Would that be fair for me to say, and again, I know that this is all perspective and you take this, but just from the passing standpoint, take that even number of 100. If you divide that by 12 games, it's 8.3.
Right.
So passing the football, tell me if I'm wrong. Just I don't have this pulled up. I'm letting you read out these numbers.
Yeah.
100 points divided by 12 games is 8.3. Passing the football, are these numbers indirectly saying that Byron Brown's offensive game passing through the air was worth more than a touchdown of what Jackson Arnold's was?
I'm trying to kind of figure that out. I think what it means, I think that is part of it. I think it's more of just like, is it efficiency points? And again, I am not.
Okay, so efficiency points not necessarily directly leading to points on a scoreboard.
I do not believe, again, this is what the glossary does on CFP Graphs. Again, a great website. Check it out if you're an analytic nerd like myself and Christian. The definition is measures how much a play or series of play changes in a team's expected points. A positive EPA means the offense improved their scoring chances. Negative means they hurt their scoring chances. So I think this is more 8% more likely. Think of it as a percentage. So, or this is the gold standard. So basically, looking at another, here's a insanely insane statistic, sack rate. You ready? This is an easy.
No, I'm not ready for this.
Byron Brown had a 4% sack rate. That's good for 33rd. That's pretty solid. It's every 100 dropbacks, you're getting sacked four times. Jackson Arnold, 10.5.
So one out of every 10 dropbacks led to him being tackled in the backfield.
Yes, and he was the only qualified Auburn starter. Ashton Daniels and Deuce Knight did not qualify for the statistical to be able to be measured statistically.
Right, and I think that leads, yes, partially to Jackson. And I think, again, I think, and I've seen a lot of people talking about this on social media, about expecting Jackson Arnold to have a really good year at UNLV because it's going to be Dan Mullen just bringing the confidence back to Jackson Arnold. And I know that Auburn fans don't love hearing things like that. But if anything, I think that that will be more so pointed towards Hugh Freeze rather than Jackson Arnold, because you go back and you look at all of the conversations and all of the frustrations offensively. I don't think anybody really knew what was going on. You go ask Peyton Thorne and you go ask anybody that has anything other than do than Jarquez Hunter, where it's, okay, I'm getting the ball off the left side and I'm going to try and find a hole. But
right. You
go and you ask what the overall metrics and the overall ideology of what the offense looked like, and it really wasn't found. Rather than you go and you look at the Vanderbilt game where you finally had a new play caller, and it was like, holy cow, this is what a competent offense looks like. And so I know a lot of that, again, is looking at this sack totals on offensive line, but obviously the quarterback plays a part in that too. But I would favor that more towards how poor the offensive line was. And the offensive line for Auburn that had six graded draft prospects, even though you only have five starters. It's pretty impressive.
Right. I think looking at it is a thing to look at it as well as on the coaching side of it is what plays were being called versus what the talent on the field would be best suited for. I looking at what Auburn was able to do personnel-wise, I'm not going to say anything rude about the players. I'm just going to say I don't think an offense where you're going to take a snap and you're going to set up a deep throw for 3 seconds or a complex downfield passing was good for an offensive line that couldn't block very well.
Considering that after the spring game, when asked about what the offense looked like, it was in run offense, they look great. In quick passing, they look good enough. In deep passing, long-term protection was pretty suspect. It was pretty bad. That was what that was the word that we got from the head man, from the offensive coordinator, was, yeah, the long-term blocking, the pass protection on deep routes is not what we want to see.
But that's what we saw. It's all there was. And that, I think, leads to that number where Jackson was not put in a place to succeed as much because of the fact of there was no offensive line, and every receiver wasn't expecting to get the ball until 3 seconds. That's going to lead to sacks. That's going to lead to him having to run for his life, and that's going to hurt the throw accuracy.
Yeah.
I think that's what that numbers really tell you.
Very much so.
When you combine the tape and the numbers, you know, obviously numbers don't lie. Tape doesn't lie either. You put them together, it's the whole truth.
And it brings an understanding of why it looked the way that it did.
Right, yeah. It's not saying – I don't read those numbers saying Jackson Arnold is the 120th best quarterback in the country. I don't. I think he's going to have a really good year under a guy that can utilize his strength of running the football and short, quick throws like a Dan Mullen, a guy that has been a winning head coach before and understands what to do.
In the modern era of college football.
Correct. And we could talk all day about Dan Mullen if I really wanted to, but I think looking at what the offense is going to be good at, that's what it is. Alex Golish knows what Byron Brown's good at. That's the offense that you're going to see on Saturdays.
And he also knows that there are 3, if not 4, if not 5 guys in the backfield alongside Byron Brown that can take the carries as well, right? It's not going to be, all right, here's our bell cow. He's had 28 carries. Keep on giving it to him. This isn't Trey Mason in the SEC championship against Missouri where, all right, you ready to have 40-plus carries? You ready to have 46, was it 45 or 46 carries? Stats department, I need that number. 45 or 46 for 307, I believe.
All right, hold on.
I'm digging deep into the brain. It was either 307 or for some reason 311.
306 rushing.
306, dang it.
46 carries.
I'll take that. The exact number of carries and 1 yard off. I will happily take that. Was it 5 scores?
4 touchdowns and on the ground.
Gosh, dang it.
And then also had a catch for 8 yards.
How many did Cameron Artis Payne have in that game?
Cameron Artis Payne had 2 carries for 36 yards and a touchdown.
He did have a touchdown. Okay,
the 21-yard.
Yes.
21-yarder.
That was the other one. Oh, man.
Nick Marshall had 100 rushing yards and a touchdown.
Oh, dude,
16 carries.
That was, gosh, don't bring me back to that offense. Funny enough, we will talk a little bit about that in hour number 2 because that's, man.
Man.
Tears. What movie? Is that Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs? It's enough to make a grown man cry?
Yeah. Good movie.
It's a good movie.
Didn't really love the sequel, but
no,
it was okay. It was fine. We gotta get a break.
We do have to get the break. We'll come back and wrap up a conversation that has taken up all of hour number 1, but had a really good time doing so. We'll come back, wrap up hour number 1 after this.
You are on the line with Kristen Griffin and Trip Upton on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and on the Radio Alabama app.
Wrapping up hour number 1 here on the Thursday edition of On the Line. I'm Christian Griffin. He is Trip Upton here inside the ESPN 106.7 studio. And how funny is it that you get two guys that love the analytics, love the numbers, as well as the talking points. And you can turn something that we had from 2 to 2:15 on our rundown for the entire of our, the entirety of hour
yeah.
number 1 speaks to talking season at its finest, yet being able to dive into a lot of these numbers, not only on the offensive side, but the defensive side as well. Some of the special teams numbers in terms of starting field position and how Auburn was one of the worst offensive starting field positions in the country, and you almost feel like that is because of the offense as well. Just, oh, we can't get outside the 20-yard line. Okay, we're going to punt. Our defense is going to get a stop at midfield. They're going to punt it right back to us, and we're going to start over at the 15-yard line again.
That's so what it felt like. Like, anytime you would get to the 40, it'd be, guys, like, what is happening? Like,
yeah.
Go to the other team's 40. It's like, okay, they have a shot now.
Yeah. We'll take our one play 25-yard gain or our one play 40-yard pass, and we'll go four and outs, not three and out. We'll get that first down on the first play, and then we'll just punt afterwards to give give Hudson Cock a little bit more room. The Buddha, we'll give him a little bit more time to,
I mean,
to run out
for him. It's okay.
It is.
Love the guy.
Very much so. Very much so. But again, all of that was in the first 53 minutes of the program. And while we do have just a few more minutes before the music kicks us out of here and we make our way to hour number two, do want to give an update on the John Deere Classic for Mr. Jackson Koivin, as this is the very first time that you have seen him in a PGA Tour without the amateur card, without the A next to his name, his professional debut. And I don't think that it went necessarily how he would have liked. I think he would have been the first one to tell you that. And I think he'd tell you that off the first tee box, that the day just didn't go how he wanted. I don't think he swung it very well here this afternoon. He shot two over, which, I mean, all things considered, bro, you shot two over, like, that's trash. Like, get me out there. Anybody would be like, oh, you shot a 73 with three birdies. I would take that any day of the week. Yet when you go and you look at the entirety of the field, you have guys like Lucas Glover, whose scorecard looks like yours does. A lot of green circles. He shot eight under here this morning. And Koivin got a little bit of ground to make up. I would imagine, looking at it right now, the cut will probably, as of right now, probably sits at two under, if not one under. And so just from that standpoint, try and think to double that. So 3-4 under is going to be the cut line for this tournament. So Koivin's got a little bit of ground to make up. But how awesome is it just being able to see him make his professional debut? And again, another guy that is an Auburn Tiger that you hope to see and will see at the top of the leaderboards for years to come.
Right. Looking at kind of his round, shot a 35 on the front nine, but then a 38 on the back. Only one birdie, three bogeys, five bogeys on the day.
And weirdly enough, I believe he started on nine, and so his front nine was the back nine. So his back nine did end up being a little bit better, but didn't he go bogey, bogey on eight and nine?
Yes. So he could have basically been...
Could have shot even on the day.
Yeah.
But his basically 17 and 18 went bogey, bogey to end it.
Interesting. I didn't know they did that again for this tournament, the shotgun start. But yeah, I mean, looking at it, 61% greens at regulation, 57% fairways in regulation. Just got to be better, and I think he will be tomorrow, hopefully.
Yeah, hopefully so. We'll be able to hopefully recap a pretty solid weekend for Jackson Koivin. If he can have a really good round two, make the cut, continue playing at the John Deere Classic up in Illinois. That'll do it for hour number one. When we come back, we'll dive into the GOATs at every number, an ESPN article, and how an Auburn jersey is not shown once on the entire graphic.
Is an Auburn Network production.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. To be a part of the show, call 334-321-1390 or text in at 334-784-1067. The boys are bringing you all the action on the Auburn Opelika Sports Leader. When it comes to the Tigers, the SEC, and the hottest topics in sports, this is where you want to be.
ESPN lists the GOAT for every single football jersey number. There are zero Auburn players.
Now, live from Auburn, Alabama, straight from the ESPN 106.7 studio, here's Kristen Griffin and Trip Upton.
Hour number one in the books. We welcome you into hour number two here on the Thursday edition of On the Line. He is Trip Upton. I'm Christian Griffin. Appreciate everybody for being here with us and spending a little time here on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, or that Radio Alabama app. Happy July 2nd. Another warm day. What is that, 93 I see on the unnamed weather app? My goodness. Outside today, thinking about it, and for... a way too early programming note. The 1st of August, I'll be gone, and I will be out in California for undisclosed reasons. But looking at it, and I looked at it yesterday, the high there is 70 right now.
Really?
And so a wild thought.
Well, there's a big heat wave across like the eastern half of the United States. I see people like in New York City, it's like, hey, set your AC to 78 degrees, and it's like, huh, that's cool. That's cool here. You
it
know?
Ain't the heat, it's the humidity.
It's the humidity, brother. Detroit's like power grid is like almost failing, and so.
Jeez.
Meanwhile, that's just like an average summer, average day. You know, 93 is a little warm, but like, again, I know people that have put hoodies on in the 70s.
The idea that I might be able to wear a hoodie in a month sounds weird to me, but. Appreciate everybody for being here with us. Had a really fun hour number one, and it was something that we planned on talking a little bit about, and it was just how explosive this Alex Golish offense can be for the Auburn Tigers. And we were able to talk about South Florida's offense versus Auburn's offense and how Auburn was able to get the big-time plays but couldn't sustain drives whatsoever. We dove into a lot of the analytical side of things of how good the South Florida offense was last year, how good Byron Brown was last year, and how good Auburn's defense was in comparison to how poor the offense was, to where if you can combine those two together, which is what you're going to see this year, you hope that there will be a whole lot of great success.
Very nice.
And talked about points per play, points per drive, and how South Florida averaged more than a yard and a half per play, yards more per play than Auburn did, also averaged about 0.8 more points per drive than the Auburn Tigers did. And you don't think about that per drive, but think about it per half, think about it per game, think about it per season. Adds a lot of value. All of that was in hour number one, and we just continued that conversation, continued up bringing new numbers and new conversational points, and it took up just about all of hour number one. We also gave some Jackson Koivun updates for the John Deere, as well as Koivun sits at 2-over after a frustrating round number one. Hopefully he can turn that around and get back to the way that he wants to play, and we know that he can play and the expectation that he has for himself. But all of that was in hour number one. If you missed any of it, you can always go back and check it out at our podcast center at ESPNAU.com.
And in hour number two, we talked to Chris Gordy, the host of the Locked On SEC podcast, our locked in 3:30 guests every single Thursday. We'll talk to him about what's going on in the recruiting trail across the SEC, the comments from Trinidad Chambliss earlier, I think today or yesterday, talking about LSU and Lane Kiffin, as well as some other things going on around the Southeastern Conference. Maybe get his World Cup opinion, since I know he's anti-Olympics. I wonder if he likes the World Cup. Or if not, we'll also look at a list of basically what ESPN says is the best player at every single number in college football history. And there are some notable snubs from the Auburn Tigers. There's two that I wrote down, and we can debate those two, as well as look at some other numbers and maybe say, oh, this is a little bit too high, too low, just right. But if you want to be a part of the conversation, the phone lines are open for the first 30 minutes. Give us a call, 334-321-1390, as well as the text box, which is always open at 334-784-1685.
And before we dive into everything here in hour number two, was it a red card? You brought up the World Cup.
Oh, I watched probably the first half and some change. So the time that I had clicked off to put up some laundry or something, it was when the red card. It looks like he's going for the ball, but I think they're looking at the push on the back a little bit more.
No.
I don't think it's a red card, because you look at a play that Messi did that was a routine play that was the same exact play. He didn't get a red card.
That wasn't carded whatsoever.
I wouldn't card him. But yeah, I'm excited to talk in hour number two.
Yeah. The fact that you can't go back and review that either. I mean, that is basically a very, very poor targeting penalty that you can't go back and look at. And I know we get a phone call here in just a moment, but with St. Tripp, it felt like that red card was a very, very poorly timed, very, very bad targeting penalty that you couldn't go back and look at. And now you're starting safety, or your middle linebacker that is feared amongst the other offenses now has to miss the round of 16. And so,
yeah, and it's
very, very unfortunate.
Yeah, and I have a good buddy of mine whose family is from Belgium, and he's rooting for he's rooting for a good time during that game. We've asked him because he's lived in America most of his life. Mm-hmm. And he's like all of his family is from Belgium. So he's rooting for Belgium in this game, but then he's going to root for the winner of the rest of the World Cup. And I said I'd give him a little bit of a pass.
Yeah. And maybe you just need to go get like a Santa Clara judge for an injunction and then just let him, whoever, you know, the guy that got the red card, just make it to where he can play and you're not allowed to review it. You're not allowed to
look at it
until after the World Cup is over. And feels like the best way to go about it. Why have football when you can have college football, right?
Right. No, I definitely agree with that. But we go to the phone lines to start our number two. Clay in Montgomery, my friend, you're on the line. How are you doing?
Hey, I'm doing good. Y'all doing all right today?
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir.
We're doing well.
I'm intrigued because I've not seen this article.
Oh, man.
Or seen who these jerseys are. And there's and I know I'm a homer. I'm dang gone sure an Auburn fan, and I give more credit probably to some than I should. But there's a couple of numbers that I just want to know who was number two jersey on the list.
Yeah, this is one that I'm sure will not fire you up whatsoever. He goes by the name Prime. Mr. Deion Sanders is listed as the best player to ever wear number two in college football.
Mm. Yeah.
I forgot he was number two. That at least is not horrible, but there's not been a better college football player than Cameron Newton ever.
No.
The history of college football.
No, Clay, I
in
don't.
In my opinion.
No,
he won a national championship by himself.
No, yes. Literally was the off-air reason, L, for why I was like, oh, we have to have this on here, because the reason that they give in this article, and we'll get more into it in a minute, but it's literally talking about Deion Sanders' punt return numbers is the reason of why he got the nod over a guy like Cam Newton or some other guys that he's listed over that I think deserve it just as much.
Cameron Newton won a national championship by himself.
Yeah, Dwight, but Deion Sanders was a good punt returner, okay?
Not a single offensive player on that team ever started an NFL football game.
Nope, I think there are.
Cam was.
I think there are two combined statistics for that entire offense, but Deion Sanders was a good punt returner, and that's not shade at what Deion was able to do, but yeah, you look at Charles Woodson, you look at, I mean, guys like Derrick Henry as well. I mean, there are quite a good number. You look at Johnny Football as well. I mean, that feels like that's worth a conversation.
Yeah, what?
There's quite a few guys that wear the number two that I think that number is one that brings up great debate.
All right, and here's an odd number.
Okay.
74. Who was number 74?
I have this one listed because this was another one that this Auburn player, and I assume you're asking about Mr. Tracy Rocker. He is listed as
the greatest defensive lineman to ever play for Auburn University. Well, was the greatest defensive lineman to ever play for Auburn University.
Right.
And I think he's the greatest defensive lineman in college.
Well, he's listed as the number one honorable mention. They go with John Hicks, offensive tackle for Ohio State, which three-time Big Ten champion, Outland Trophy, Heisman Trophy runner-up at offensive tackle. That's pretty good, but again, yeah, I don't know if you heard, not a single Auburn player was named to that number. There were some honorable mentions and some snubs that we're going to get into that I think are absurd.
That's in which, now 34 is such a common number.
Mm-hmm.
You can have you can have discussions about that. Who did they choose for 34? Herschel?
Yeah, yes. They went Herschel.
Bo was number two.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
I'll just leave it.
Yeah, well, yes. Said for the radio purposes.
What about 55? That's an odd number.
55.
55
was pretty daggone good.
He very much was. He wasn't even listed in one of the honorable mentions. That was one that I thought of as well. They went Derek Thomas, a linebacker from Alabama from the mid-'80s.
Okay. No, I can buy that. I can live with that one. What about 93?
93, I'm scrolling down right here. 93, that they gave that one to Ndamukong Suh, the defensive tackle from Nebraska.
Okay, I can live with that.
Yeah.
That was Andre Bruce, the number one overall draft pick from Auburn University. But I can live with that. And what about 90? Nick Fairley number.
He was an honorable mention, but they gave it to Steve Emptman, defensive lineman from Washington in the late 80s, early 90s.
Yeah, now I'm going to say a big fat no on that as well.
Yes.
Yeah, you feel
Listen, guys, when you are so dominant at a position that you make the rules change, you are the greatest at your position ever.
When
you have the rules committee getting together and going, we can't let another Nick Fairley come through here.
Yeah.
You know, we got to stop them. It's just like Gus Malzahn's offense. Now, we can't let the rules that's been around for you know, 100 years. We've got to change them because it's too effective.
Yeah.
That's when you have done something. But those were just a couple that popped in my mind. So I look forward to listening to the rest of the conversation and seeing what y'all got to say about it and the other callers. I appreciate you taking the call, guys.
Yes, sir, of course.
Yes,
hopefully
sir.
All is well in your world. And, yeah, I appreciate you for calling in. And we are, yeah, we're diving into a lot of these numbers. Again, for those that missed it, diving into the article on ESPN that is the best college football players of all time listed by jersey number. And this is from 0 to 99. And, again, with the little bit of teaser, there is not a single Auburn player that is listed from 0 to 99.
Right. Just hitting what we talked about with our good buddy Clay Dion over Cam Newton for number 2, a one that if your statistic that you're using to back it up is punt return yards and the swagger you have over Cam Newton, a Heisman, a number 1 overall draft pick, even Charles Woodson, who won a Heisman and was the first defensive Heisman ever, you're going to go the guy that didn't win that award that just brought the swagger back. Hey, he laid out his uniform. That was cool. That's ridiculous to me. And then, yeah, Bo Jackson, Herschel Walker, fair. I understand that a little bit. I mean, Herschel Walker, one of the only 3-time Heisman Award finalists, won the Heisman Award. Bo Jackson was good as well. Those are two guys that are 1A, 1B in that era. Nick Fairley at 90, probably he was an honorable mention, probably did not get that because I would not be surprised if Aaron Murray's mom is on the selection committee for this list.
Yeah, again, even just looking at diving through this, his name's not even on there, but just thinking about Johnny Manziel, the way that he changed college football.
That's so insane that he's not on the
list. Not even an honorable mention. I mean, that's somebody that changed the quarterback position from, I mean, just that pocket presence game manager to the star of the football field. And people talk all about his name in terms of, gosh, what his NIL would have looked like just based off of the talent alone. And
what does NIL look like under the table?
Still, what it looks like publicly now. Diving through a couple of these numbers again before we head to break, where we will continue this. Number 0 is a relatively new number, and so one that has not been around for too long for there to be all sorts of greats. Honorable mentions are Ollie Gordon, Jordan Tyson for Arizona State, who I feel like is a pretty solid pick.
Yeah.
And then Anthony Hill Jr., the linebacker from Texas. But they gave it to Xavier Watts, the safety from Notre Dame from the early 2020s. Number 1 is Larry Fitzgerald, the wide receiver from Pitt. And I really, really hope that, and unfortunately just based off of my age, I was not old enough to truly remember or even watch Larry Fitzgerald at Pittsburgh. And so I really do hope that this is not legacy, because obviously Larry Fitzgerald, what he did in the NFL for the Cardinals is unanimously fantastic. But
yeah.
I really, really hope that all of this, and I don't think that Fitzgerald is against this argument, but I hope that it is truly based off of college players and what they did in college rather than just in the NFL.
I mean, one of Biletnikoff was in a unanimous All-American. He's in the College Football Hall of Fame. 18 games with a touchdown catch.
Sure.
Those are all good. I mean, granted, looking at over Kyler Murray, a Heisman, I would have him over Jamar Chase 100%, who's also listed, as well as Anthony Carter. But I don't know if I'd put him over Kyler Murray. I think those are two, like, again, it's a Heisman that only played one season versus a guy that dominated for 2 years
right.
at a different position. Where a dominant wide receiver sticks out a lot more than a Heisman quarterback in terms of, like, when you're looking at these kind of lists, as you will find out as we get some numbers that we're going to get fired up over. But no, yeah, I don't think I disagree with you. And then two other Auburn numbers I was going to mention. Tracy Rocker at 74 as an honorable mention, and then Greg Carr at 54 as an honorable mention. Both Pat Sullivan and Terry Beasley, not even mentioned.
Mm.
At number 77 and 8, respectively. Those are Mike Vick for 7, or for 7, and then Randy Moss for 88. I think both those are fine, but a Heisman winner, Pat Sullivan, not even mentioned. But then you have Davey O'Brien on the list. Kind of seems like you're choosing one side or the other, and there will be some contradictions we'll get into in the next segment.
Yeah, again, Michael Vick is one of those that Virginia Tech, again, fantastic at Tech, but the NFL career is what really stands out, at least on my side of things, because I was not old enough to watch him play at Virginia Tech. Real quickly, before we get to break, number 3 is Carson Palmer, over names of Joe Montana, Keyshawn Johnson for USC, and Todd Gurley. For number 4, Deshaun Watson over Champ Bailey, Dalvin Cook, Jeremiah Love from Notre Dame. That number 4 brings up some really good players. Darren McFadden for number 5, over LaDainian Tomlinson, over Reggie Bush, over Christian McCaffrey.
This is the number, man, number 5. Number 5 was the one they used to justify the list of, like, yeah, if you take a blind look at their numbers, and but then you add context to it, it's like, do one or the other. Meanwhile, Reggie Bush legitimately just put on the tape. He put the ball behind his back and juked a dude out. That was insane.
Baker Mayfield at number 6 over Devontae Smith. Again, Michael Vick at number 7.
Davey
O'Brien at number 8 over Julio Jones, over Marcus Mariota, over Lamar Jackson.
That one's one that made me mad.
So wild, just going back and looking at some of the best players to wear each number. That number 8 is absolutely insane. Joe Burrow at number 9. Sure, I don't necessarily think that there's too many arguments over that. Number 10, Vince Young over RG3, over Troy Smith, over Steve Slayton.
I love both Vince Young and RG3, so that's so tough. But, I mean, it's really just, do you want a Heisman that didn't win a national championship or a Heisman runner-up that did win a national championship? I mean, Vince Young won football games.
Yeah. Feels like, yeah, which one you're deciding to weigh in terms of the overall legacy. We will take a break and continue this conversation on the other side. There's some names in the teens that I feel like might fire some people up this afternoon, and a couple others that we definitely want to highlight as well before we get to Chris Gordy, host of the Locked On SEC podcast, and see which ones he agrees with or disagrees with. We continue on here on the Thursday edition of On the Line right after this.
You're on the line with Kristen Griffin and Trip Upton. If you want to be a part of the show, call 334-321-1390 or text us at 334-784-1067.
Nothing like continuing to dive down this list and firing ourselves up again during the break instead of saving it while we're on the air. He is Trip Upton. I'm Christian Griffin. Appreciate everybody for being here with us. And we're diving through the ESPN article of the best college football players to wear that respective number. And we've hit through 1 through 12, or 1 through 10, rather. And again, 5 is one that brings up controversy. 8 is one that brings up controversy. And from the Auburn standpoint, 2 is one that definitely brings up controversy. The next number that I am going to is number 12. Because when I think about this, I wouldn't have even needed the honorable mentions to at least give you Colt McCoy and give you Andrew Luck.
Sure.
ESPN says Travis Hunter. And I do not want to take away from what he did and what he still does in the NFL, because a Heisman Trophy winner playing both sides of the football and doing so good, I don't want that to be taken lightly or taken for granted, but being good at both positions doesn't give you the right, in my opinion, of some of these other numbers. Joe Namath, again, from that standpoint,
I guess if you look at those numbers, like, yes, Colt McCoy won or was a winner and had the statistics. Andrew Luck was the number 1 overall draft pick. Joe Namath had kind of the aura that you've seen at other guys. Travis Hunter did win the Heisman, but he didn't win. Like, he didn't win football games, rather.
Well, that and, I mean, so many people. Are you telling me that Travis Hunter deserved that over Ashton Jeanty? Did you fall in that boat?
I want Ashton, but I was okay with Travis because, again, we haven't seen that of a two-way player that could be still a pro, maybe not a pro bowler, but like an all-conference, all-American level. And I think it was more of he was doing both at the same time gave him the bump. Now, I think what also gave him the bump is the Deion Sanders media circus.
Yeah, the social media factor. I know he became like a Twitch streamer as well. And
yes.
It made it to where that was the first, and I'm sure there's been others, but at least that I can think of, that became the first social media-ified Heisman Trophy winning, if you will, just based off of it felt like the popular vote rather than what may have been the correct vote.
I don't disagree with that necessarily. I think I understand the idea of putting Travis Hunter at this number, but again, looking at what it's the consistency that I don't get is that we're going to talk about the impact of Deion Sanders of like, oh, his aura, but he didn't really put up a ton of numbers over Cam Newton, who won a Heisman, was the number one overall pick, won a national championship, one of the few people to do that all in a year,
mm-hmm.
And talking about that. But then I look over at number eight with Davey O'Brien, who, no disrespect to Mr. O'Brien, who played football in 1936 and 38, almost 100 years ago. And you want to know the number to know that's so important, 1,457, because it was the passing yard record in a season that stood for a decade.
Heck yeah.
Let me look up Lamar.
Did Lamar run for that many?
That's literally what I'm looking up.
Yeah, I mean, while you're looking, it shows you just the weight that certain numbers have, right? I mean,
yeah, he had 1,500 rushing yards and 21 touchdowns on the ground.
On the ground alone.
And he's the fourth honorable mention. Julio Jones deserves some consideration as well. Marcus Mariota won a Heisman and was the number two overall pick behind Jameis Winston.
Mm.
But we're going to put it because the name of the football award is because he played back in the day, you know, when you couldn't even watch the games on TV.
When you threw it with two hands?
When you threw it with two hands, you walked to school up and down both hills, both ways, in the snow.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
I remember those days.
You remember those days, right. Yep. Yeah. But just because he won a Heisman, cool. Name me one other player that played in the 1936 to 38 season. If anyone can name
you
me,
got me.
If you can, anyone can name me one, I'd be shocked. But because he's again, he was the first guy rather than the latest guy, and then you have and it's just the inconsistency in some of that. Because if you're going to say, well, like aura and importance of college football. Bo knows Bo Jackson, like, over Herschel Walker. But then they back up with Herschel stats, Herschel's trophy case. But they don't do that for other people.
Mm-hmm.
It's inconsistent. I don't like it.
Yeah, 15, Tim Tebow, Trevor Lawrence, number 16, behind or over Peyton Manning, over Chris Winkie. 17, Charlie Ward, over Bobby Dodd, over Phillip Rivers.
I love Bobby Dodd.
Yeah. 18th, Archie Manning, over Jason White, Marvin Harrison Jr., Roman Gabriel. Not too many complaints. On that side of things, is there another number that stood out to you that was like, there's no way, real quickly?
I think I love LeVar Arrington at 11. He is really good. I have Penn State friends, and he is like was ninth in Heisman voting, but over Matt Leinart, a guy that won a Heisman, Steve Spurrier, a guy that won the Heisman, and the winningest quarterback in college football history, Kellen Moore. Those guys, I think, would
he's a lefty.
Out.
Give it to him.
Yes.
Give it to Kellen Moore.
I mean, LeVar was good, but those guys were all-time great.
Oh, yeah. Let's see what Chris Gordy thinks, host of the Locked On SEC podcast. See if there's a GOAT that he has that's either on this list or maybe not. We'll also get some recruiting and anything else going on in the world of the SEC with Chris Gordy. He joins us next.
Halfway through hour number two, you're on the line with Auburn Opelika's sports leader, ESPN 106.7.
30 more minutes here on this Thursday afternoon. He is Trip Upton. I'm Christian Griffin. Appreciate everybody for being here with us on ESPN 106.7. And we have been breaking down the ESPN article of the best players to ever wear every single jersey number from 0 to 99. And I know that there is a man who has absolutely no thoughts, no harsh feelings, or no big opinions on anything in this topic. Mr. Chris Gordy, host of the Locked On SEC podcast, here with us. Chris, have you been able to look at this article at all? Are there any snubs in your mind or any numbers that you haven't seen yet that you would like us to make you mad for?
I haven't read it yet, but I can officially announce we have entered that time of the offseason where we have run out of ideas.
100%.
And we are looking for anything and everything to write articles about. We were in list season. List season is over now. Now we're just going to ranking best players at every number. It's that's insane. No, I will check that out, though. It sounds pretty cool.
I mean, number 2, number 5, number 8, all of those are ones that are very, very much up for debate. Not having Cam, not having Lamar Jackson, you feel like those are definitely ones that will fire up the SEC fan base. And we were able to fire up some Auburn fans because there is not a single Auburn player on this entire list. But yes,
oh, wow.
Talking season is officially upon us. We spent hour number one diving into the explosiveness of South Florida's offense versus Auburn's last year and found out that South Florida basically averaged 1 point more than Auburn's did every single drive. And so if you added that up, Auburn wins like 9 games last year if you add another touchdown to what they did.
That's insane. I mean, it's crazy because every time I feel like I didn't think Hugh Freeze did that bad of a job, I go back and look at it and go, God, it was like malpractice how bad the offense was the last couple of years.
Oh, yeah.
Especially with all the talent they had. But, yeah, that's pretty wild. And that's why I keep telling people to be optimistic about Auburn. Look, had they lost DJ Durkin and had to bring in a new DC, you know, maybe I wouldn't be as optimistic. But the fact he's back with a lot of pieces back on that defense, and you're going to tell me the offense is going to be better? I mean, even just slightly better. This is a lot of reasons for Auburn fans to be excited.
Yeah, it fired me up so much, and I got so sad thinking about last season. I had to go back and listen to the old school CBS intros to bring a little bit of joy back to my life.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of what you have to do when you talk about the Brian Harsin years and the Hugh Freeze years. I mean, it's been a while.
Maybe that Coach Freeze thought that the it's just like golf, his favorite sport, of the lower score wins, so he didn't want to score any points.
Look, all I know is when he said, everybody knows what we're trying to do here, trying to get back to a bowl game.
Bowl game,
like,
baby.
You have lost it, and you are dead man walking.
Well, the reason, again, we wanted to bring you on here, and primarily because, again, the Locked On SEC podcast taking off right now, continuing even throughout the summer, doing great numbers, as is the Twitter feed as well. We saw that you are at the Peyton Manning, is it the Passing Academy that, down, and you mentioned it, where it's hotter than just about everything in the entire world. And I know that Peyton Manning had some quotes before we dive into what somebody said that's going to be taking the snaps at Ole Miss.
Yeah, well, the Peyton Manning thing was interesting because normally, like, they have a 30-minute availability with all the quarterbacks that are at the camp, and the Mannings normally talk first, and I really never usually get time to talk with Peyton or Eli or Archie, but this year they made themselves a little bit more available. And so, you know, one of the things that stood out when the schedules came out a few weeks ago, I noticed in week four, Texas goes to Tennessee. And I just was kind of joking with Peyton. I said, hey, you know, who are you going to be rooting for in that game? He said, well, you know, family comes first over alma mater. And I put that out there. And, man, it fired up the Tennessee fans. They're going, man, where's your allegiances here? Arch isn't your son. He's your nephew. You know, why are you rooting for him over the school you cheer for? So, yeah, that thing took off and kind of blew up and made some national headlines from it. But wasn't trying to do anything nefarious. It was just having some fun with a question that I think everybody kind of asked themselves. But Archie kind of went through the same thing when Peyton and Eli would play each other, or mm-hmm. when Peyton was at Tennessee and played Ole Miss, or, you know, vice versa. So, yeah, it was just kind of a funny thing that kind of blew up there. But, yeah, we got to hear from a lot of different quarterbacks. You know, Trinidad, look, you can't not be impressed with Trinidad Shambles. He says all the right things. I mean, he's everything you want in a quarterback. And even just hearing him talk and answer a bunch of questions on Friday, it made me kind of reevaluate. You know, I've been thinking all offseason that Ole Miss is going to take a little bit of a step back at losing Lane Kiffin and you know, all the different coaches that they lost. But, man, I start to look at it and go, I think they're going to be really good. I just, especially with Keyon Lacey back and Trinidad, you know, maybe 9 wins, that's a slight step back and not making the playoff, but it still is a heck of a year given, you know, what Ole Miss's standard typically is.
Maybe Peyton can just wear one of those parent jerseys where it's like split down the side of half son, half other son, like the Branches did at the College World Series, or the Kelsey mom does when her sons were playing in the NFL. Just get something that's split right down the middle. It has the Tennessee logo, so that way he can make that side of the fans happy, and then can make the Texas and Arch fans happy as well.
Yeah, what was the soccer team that played at Auburn a few weeks ago? With that kid that had the split soccer jersey.
Yes, yeah, it had like half Argentina, half Auburn baseball. Yeah, that was it was awesome.
Yeah, it's
a lot of connections funny, though, with Argentina and Auburn.
Right, right. I mean, it's funny because a lot of Tennessee fans I saw said, you know, it's like the simple response is, "Look, I hope Arch has a great day, but I hope Tennessee wins."
Sure,
like, it's okay to say that, but I think honestly, I think the Manning family is so invested in Arch. When you think about Peyton came so close but didn't win a championship, T. Martin won it. Eli had some great teams at Ole Miss but fell just short against LSU in 03. Like, I think they feel like this is their chance. Like, Arch is the best chance for the Manning family to win a national championship, so I feel like they're all in.
Speaking of national championship winning quarterbacks, we have Chris Gordy, host of the Locked On SEC podcast. Who are some names that you saw at the camp that performed better than you expected or performed well enough to take note of that our fans need to be aware of?
Well, the parts that I'm there for, they're just coaching up the kids. So I'm seeing them more in like a coach role and kind of you know, being a camp counselor kind of thing. But man, John Mateer, getting to see him throw a little bit. I mean, he has completely retooled his arm mechanics. He said he fell into some bad habits last year with post-thumb surgery. He had to kind of retool his entire arm so that, you know, to make it less awkward throwing. Well, he got with some of the quarterback coaches that have worked with Josh Allen in Buffalo, and kind of worked to get his mechanics back. And he's got a quicker release. That's the big thing you can kind of see now, is it's kind of almost a short arm, and that ball's coming out quick. And so just kind of intriguing to watch. Oklahoma, I know they've got one of the toughest schedules out there, but that defense was incredible last year. Brent Venables, you know they're going to be awesome defensively again, or defensively. If that offense can take a step forward with John Mateer being fully healthy this year, Oklahoma is definitely a team to watch.
And another name that you mentioned was Trinidad Chambliss, and you mentioned feels like he says all the right things and very impressive when you talk to him in the interviews. There was one specific question that you felt like was just a matter of time until it got asked, and was set up perfectly for him to answer it the way that he did in terms of the game that he is looking forward to the most. And he gave a 3-word answer and said Louisiana State University. That Week 3 game is going to have all of the drama outside the football field. You hope that the game delivers as well with Lane Kiffin making his return to Oxford. What are the overall expectations, I guess, from that game? I know that it's a bit impossible to answer, but seeing all of the hype and the drama continue to build outside the lines to where we hope that everything works its way on the scoreboard to be just as good.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to have a lot of hype. It's going to have a lot of build up, but the reality is it's so early in the season. I still feel like whoever loses the game is not, you know, season's not over. You still got a lot to play for. So, and really, I mean, look, Lane Kiffin's the villain here. I think everybody in the country is going to be rooting against LSU. They knew that when they brought up Lane Kiffin on. But my question is, what happens if LSU wins? I mean, you know, then they're even the villain times two. Like, everybody's going to be rooting for them to lose the rest of the way. So it's a tough spot for them. But, man, I know the folks in Oxford are going to be – I just hope that they're going to be screaming like crazy, cursing. Just watch what you throw. Like, I just hope it doesn't turn into somebody does something stupid, throws a full beer bottle at Lane Kiffin's head or something like that.
Only but, mustard and golf balls, right?
Yeah, I mean, you know, maybe an empty bottle or something. But it certainly is, you know, a game that is going to mean a lot. It's going to be hyped up. But at the end of the day, I don't even know if come November we'll remember the game happened, right?
Oh, I'm sure. But speaking with Chris Gordy, host of the Locked On SEC podcast, changing gears here, it's been a big recruiting week across the Southeastern Conference. You have schools like South Carolina picking up big recruits, Alabama gaining a little bit of steam, maybe not as much as what they expect, but they were able to pick up some solid recruits as well as a big commit for the Auburn Tigers. Talk to me about what's going on recruiting-wise across the SEC.
Yeah, I think what's so interesting is that piece, I don't know if you guys read it on On3, about how much teams are spending in recruiting right now. And it's wild, like the money that's being spent. And then on top of it, we're seeing schools throwing extra money to tell kids, hey, shut down your commitment now. I mean, there was one kid, I think they said it was committed to Notre Dame, and he was getting like $400,000. It was like, hey, we'll make it $450,000 if you shut down your recruitment. I mean, it's wild to be telling kids, we'll pay you to not take that next visit. But the other part of this too is, man, what happens if this, you know, Support College Sports Act passes, which sounds like it's got a lot of support. They're going to retool it a little bit, but let's just say some version of it passes. Man, I think Alex Golish and Mike Elko and some of these other guys are thinking that way, and that's why they're loading up for this 27 class and thinking that they're going to tell these kids down the road, look, you only get one transfer. You better, you know, use it wisely. Instead of what we've seen a lot of kids, they get the big payday their freshman year to go play somewhere, and then they immediately transfer and go somewhere else. You know, Elko and Golish and some of these other guys might be onto something here if they're loading up in this class, and it might be guys that they're able to keep on campus past 1 year. So, but man, the money is getting thrown around. It's there's got to be a breaking point at some point, because we're talking about some of these top players getting over a million dollars. Just, you know, come in as a true freshman. And I'm like, man, like, you think of the revenue share was only $20 million last year. Like, that's most of that money is coming from third-party NIL stuff. And part of me just says, like, that kid better be playing a lot his freshman year, because if he's not, what a waste of talent and money and resources if he's not playing a factor, right? I mean, you want to play a five-star freshman? Like, let's just say Jared Curtis at Vanderbilt. I know they paid a pretty penny to get him. Jared Curtis is going to be Vanderbilt's starting quarterback this year, and I expect he'll play well. But, hey, can you imagine paying one of these, like, five-star D linemen, and he's just a rotational piece, and he's getting $1 million? Be a lot of jealous players on that defense looking at him going, why does that kid get $1 million, and he's not even as good as me?
Yeah, looking at that ROI that you feel like is a big business term that maybe doesn't get looked at as much in the college football side of things. But you mentioned a really good point, and one more before we let you get out of here, and just something that I thought of again when you were talking about the College Sports Act and the 5 for 5, just the different recruiting strategies for Auburn football over the last 2 years. I mean, last year at this point in time, John Cohen and Hugh Freeze were at the point of, okay, we're going to wait and see what college football does. We're going to go about this the right way. And then, my gosh, they had to make up so much ground because nothing eventually ended up happening. Now you're seeing Auburn and Alex Golish and Warsaw and all of these guys take the mentality of, okay, if this works its way into fruition, let's go ahead and load up guys right now, just so that way, if you only do have that one transfer portal option, much less we have any success in year one and year two, it makes things that much easier to keep all of these players.
There's no doubt. And I know, look, everybody, Auburn's paying players, obviously, but
everybody else is, Chris. We don't do that here.
Right. Well, but no, what I was told was there are a few kids in this class that aren't getting, you know, anything or getting very little. What they're being sold, you know, they're buying into basically what Alex Golish and the staff are selling.
Okay.
And that's a good sign. You know, I had an A&M fan try to tell me that the other day, like, oh, we're not paying all these players. Elko is just selling them on the future.
They're just A&M guys through and through.
Yeah, but I'm just like, man, hey, look, Auburn's got a beautiful campus, but, you know, you're also in the middle. You're nearby and close to a lot of things. You go to College Station, that place is kind of it's out there. It's in the boonies, and it ain't exactly the prettiest campus. Like, you gotta really fall in love with that place if that's where you want to go play ball. But no, it's an interesting thing, because they said one of the GMs anonymously said even low-end 4-stars are getting 6 figures this recruiting cycle. And I'm just going, man, what will be the breaking point here where the coaches will go, I can't do this. Like, it's not the NFL. We have an unlimited payroll. Like, there's only X amount of dollars to go around. And if you keep asking you know, business owners and boosters to keep opening up their pockets, I think there's going to be a certain point where some of those people say, look, I'm tapped out. Stop asking me for money. And so, yeah, it's just going to be very interesting to see what happens here. But there's been talk of creating a quote-unquote cap on what could be spent on players, and I think we're getting closer and closer to that idea. It's not trying to limit the players from making money. It's just, man, this thing has doubled and tripled and quadrupled over the last 4 years. It's crazy to see where this thing could be in 3 years from now if we keep at this rate.
Yeah, the lack of guardrails initially. We're going to go back to the McDonald's bags and just the backdoor entrances and everything like that.
The
to
gold
where,
transams?
Yes, everything on that side of things. Chris Gordy.
Or how about just, you know, hey, look, we'll give you 50 grand, but let's get here and find out if you're good first. If
sure.
you're good, we'll get you $1 million down the road, but $1 million before you even step on campus, bro, how about you earn it?
Yeah, just to boost the recruiting class, just to hopefully get other guys to work its way rather than the initial idea of, okay, yeah, if this guy is good, he can go make money for 2 hours signing autographs at the local car wash, and now it's just the epitome of pay to play.
And that was the whole idea of NIL. It was like the Johnny Manziels and the Tim Tebows mm-hmm. that couldn't make anything that were absolute superstars. Let them go make money, right? I mean, like, Byron Brown, let him go make as much money as he wants at Auburn. I'm with it, but paying the five-star freshman who's never played a down $1 million, it just feels like that's disrespectful to the rest of the guys on your team.
Hey, 3A football in Iowa is legit. I mean, that's basically Big Ten SEC football, and so that's all that I know about that. Chris Gordy, host of the Locked On SEC podcast, here with us every single Thursday at 3:30. Chris, we appreciate your time. I know we're in the epitome of talking season, if you can't tell, based off of probably both of our coverage right now. But for anybody that's interested in any sort of lists up until we get going with SEC Media Days here in the middle month of July, tell everybody where they need to go and what they're going to find when they get there.
Yeah, Locked On SEC, wherever you get your podcasts. We had a couple of great interviews with some of the guys out there at Manning Passing Academy and posted those. Kenny Minchie from Notre Dame, Kamario Taylor from Mississippi State, of course, John Mateer. Locked On SEC, wherever you get your podcast.
Awesome, man. Well, we appreciate your time. Looking forward to talking with you again next Thursday.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Chris Gordy, host of the Locked On SEC podcast, again, joins us every single Thursday at 3:30. Greatly appreciate his insight, his knowledge, everything that he brings to our coverage. We'll take a break. We'll come back and quickly wrap up the week here on the Thursday edition of On the Line. We're back after this.
You are on the line with Kristen Griffin and Trip Upton on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and on the Radio Alabama app.
We are back and wrapping up the Thursday edition of On the Line here on ESPN 106.7. Wrapping up today's show, wrapping up the week. Reminder, no show for anybody here tomorrow. So it'll be ESPN programming all Friday afternoon and Friday morning for that matter as well. But appreciate everybody again for being here with us. It's wild to think how fast everything is moving right now. This wraps up week four for us. When mm-hmm. we come back, we'll be basically a month in to the revamped edition of On the Line.
Yes.
with the two of us. And so very appreciative for
fun.
Everybody that's been a part of it already through the text box, through the phone lines. Did get a text in the On the Line text box as well. Forgot to read it earlier, but it quite literally made me laugh out loud earlier. Diving into the best players to wear any sort of number. And unfortunately, it was Tim Tebow that took number 15, but Preston Howard was on the honorable mention. So
Would he be listed under Auburn or every single other team that Auburn played last season?
The benefit for the other team.
Goodness.
So, yes, he was not on that list. But, again, a fantastic show this afternoon. Again, appreciate Chris Gordy, host of the Locked On SEC podcast, joining us and giving us all of his insight, again, from the Peyton Manning Passing Academy, as well as all things recruiting, all of his insights on the Locked On SEC podcast. Have a fantastic, safe, happy 4th of July. Remember why we celebrate. This is
USA. You
absolutely
USA.
Incredible.
USA.
Happy number 250 for everybody out there.
Crazy.
For America as well. But we'll be back tomorrow. We will be back Monday to talk all about the news from the weekend. Whether you love it, whether you hate it, sports are so much better with an opinion. We will be back on Monday. Reminder again, no show tomorrow. We will be back on Monday, and we hope that you'll be there to join us.